Good afternoon. Today is Tuesday, June 18th, and it's 1:30 p.m. I'm Colette Zarnicki, your host. This is Talk on the Rock. The primary elections are in 2 months on August 20th, and Wrangell here is in District 1, which also includes Ketchikan, where Saxman, Kaufman Cove, Metlakatla, and other communities in southern southeast Alaska. With us today, we have Republican Jeremy Bynum, who is running for the Alaska House of Representatives in District 1. He's on the Ketchikan Borough Assembly and the Southeast Alaska Power Agency Board. He's also the Acting Electric Division Manager for Ketchikan Public Utilities. You can call in to ask a question. The number to KSTK is 874-2345. Since Jeremy Bynum is on a Zoom call, he won't be able to hear your question directly, but you can call the station and ask Cindy, who will relay the question to us. Again, the number is 874-2345. Jeremy, hi. Thanks for coming chatting with me today. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I appreciate the invitation.
Yes, definitely. Thanks. Yeah, thanks again for coming in. So how is the campaign going so far for you?
It's going pretty well. You know, we had the opportunity to take a run at this in 22. So we gained a lot of experience in the campaigning process and understanding the things that we need to do to run a campaign. So I think we have our campaign running pretty well at this point. We know what to expect, and we're about ready to run into this part of the season where it's really going to get very busy. So we're looking forward to it.
Yes, I imagine it's about to get really busy. So can you just talk a little bit more on what you just said? What have you noticed the difference to be between this primary election and the one back 2 years ago? What have you learned?
Well, I think the biggest thing that we've learned is the experience of actually running a campaign. You know, I've had the opportunity to do a campaign at the local level for the Borough Assembly here, as I also sit on the Borough Assembly. And when you go to that next level of running a district-wide campaign for the House, it's quite a different deal. And so we had the opportunity to do that in 22, experience what kind of work it takes to actually do campaigning, the travel required, and then the resources necessary to effectively get your message out and engage with the community members. So that's, I think, one of the biggest changes that we see is that we've had the opportunity to do it. Obviously, the field that we have now is quite different. Last time it was myself and Representative Ortiz in the race, and this time the race looks a little different. But from our perspective, nothing's going to change as far as doing the work. And that's really what it's about, is getting out into the community, meeting people, hearing some of the things that are going on in their lives and what's important to them, and trying to carry that message to Juneau when we win the election.
Yeah, great. And what's on the agenda for the campaign? I know you just mentioned visiting communities. Do you plan on visiting Wrangell and elsewhere?
Absolutely. So, you know, our calendar, when we look at our calendar from here until the election, we're busy almost every weekend with some kind of an event, whether it's a totem raising over on Prince of Wales Island, a Blueberry Festival, 4th of July activities. We're going to be Bear Fest in Wrangell. I know that's coming up. We're really looking forward to doing that this year, and all of the different activities. So we're going to be really busy.
Yes, definitely. It's summertime, too, with all those events you mentioned. So why is it important for you to run for the House of Representatives in District 1?
Well, for me, I look around the state and I see a lot of the issues that we're facing, and those are issues that are impacting us here in District 1. And I think that I have the ability to add something to the conversation as far as my experience goes, and then just the energy to try to see change happen. Some of the major issues we're seeing at the state level, which we need to have a say in, have revolve around energy. And obviously, I've I've have an extensive background in energy, specifically water power energy and hydropower. And those are things that are really important to Southeast Alaska and Alaska as a whole. So that's one of the things that I can bring to the table and have a little bit of knowledge and maybe influence some of the conversation that's happening in Juneau that impacts the state. Energy being one of the number one issues that we're going to be facing. And
Great.
then obviously some of the other things that are impacting us is housing. And this, that's a really important issue. I think it's a statewide issue. But for us here in Southeast, in our communities here, the cost of housing is such an impact on our families and the ability of our families to thrive here. And I think that there's some things that the state really needs to be looking at doing to help our communities here thrive in that area. So just a couple of the couple quick things that I'm looking at trying to do, and I think I can help. My local experience on the assembly really gives me a current view about what's actually happening in those spaces.
Yeah. So, as you know, mentioned before, you are on the Southeast Alaska Power Agency Board and you're the acting electric division manager for Ketchikan Public Utilities. Let's jump into one of the top topics you mentioned, which of course is energy. How healthy is our energy system right now?
Well, we'll make a quick little update here. So back in April of last year, I was selected as the division manager. So I am currently the division manager for KPU Electric here in Ketchikan. But to specifically answer the question about the health of our systems, we're working really hard to bring our systems up to standards that will make them sustainable for many years to come. We obviously have challenges in that space dealing with backlogged capital investment in our facilities, specifically at least here in Ketchikan. My relationship with the Southeast Alaska Power Agency or SEPA, sitting on the board as an alternate member, gives me a bit of a glimpse on what's happening across the region and in the other communities. And I think we're all in the same situation where we're striving to improve our systems to ensure that we have stable power and also that we can provide that power at the lowest practical rate throughout the region. But we are blessed with hydropower, and I believe that that is a, gives us a tremendous advantage in the state.
Yeah, and can you share how do you have plans on how to improve the energy systems in Southeast for District 1 as well?
Well, sure. For us, it's really talking about making sure that we're making that capital investment within our communities. And right now we know that up in the rail belt, there's been a big conversation revolving around energy and reliability of transmission. And the state is looking at making massive investments in those transmission systems, along with federal investment dollars. So one of the things that I want to ensure is to work with our senator in our region here to make sure that Southeast Alaska and specifically District 1 is getting a share of that valuable investment that's happening at this time. And I think that our citizens deserve their equitable share of that investment as well. And so we just want to make sure that our district isn't getting left out when it comes to the conversation of future investment in power infrastructure.
Great, thank you. So, with inflation, where do you see energy rates and services going, and how do you think it will affect Wrangell residents as well as, other residents in the Southeast?
Well, our municipal utilities are under tremendous pressure right now with inflation, and it's not just inflation of commodity goods or equipment. It's really about the labor markets as well. The electric utilities in that sector, as far as capability of capable employees. That market is shrinking. That the employee base is aging, and so we see that there's a big issue with not only the inflation of goods, like buying transformers or wire or insulators for our systems, but the labor force is becoming very, very competitive, and that puts a lot of strain on our small utilities in order to be competitive in that larger marketplace. So obviously that's going to create pressure on our rates, but I have some good, there's some positive news with that, and that is that currently right now with the historic investment that we've had in our hydropower and our systems here in Southeast, and specifically in our district, we have had and maintained very, very low rates throughout the state, some of the lowest in the country, actually. So I think there's going to be a little bit of pressure on the utilities to make adjustments necessary to ensure that we have healthy power systems as we move forward. Because as you know, stable, healthy power is going to be very important for making sure that we keep economic growth going in a positive direction. So I think that that historic investment that's been made in the past is going to take a little bit of the pressure off when we talk about where do rates have to go to keep our system healthy.
Great, thank you. And just speaking of economic growth, we're going to jump into this other question related to housing. So here in Wrangell, there's a lot of talk about how younger people are relocating, and we have an aging society here, and a huge part of that is because of the economy and limited housing. Is retaining a younger population in District 1 and here in Wrangell, of course, of interest to you?
Absolutely top priority. We want to ensure that the industries that we have are protected, and then we want to be able to foster the ability for new industries to come in, whether that's mariculture or any of the tourist-related activities that are currently in our areas. We want to make sure that we encourage our kids to stay in our communities and give them an opportunity to be able to afford homes and then also have those good quality paying jobs that I think that our economy can support and flourish. So housing is going to be I think one of the top priorities, at least for District 1 when we talk about that, and the impact that's going to have on our ability for our young people coming out of high school and we're coming back from college to contribute to our economic engine here in District 1. So that then leads to some of the other issues that we really are facing currently, and that has to do with our education system and what we're seeing happen with funding in the from the state level to our district and then within our boroughs for funding for our schools. And so tremendous amount of pressure happening right now at the local level, not just here in Ketchikan, but you're also seeing that in Wrangell and some of the other parts of the district where there's tremendous pressure about funding for schools and how do we make sure that that funding stays stable and that we keep teachers in the classroom and we keep our kids getting educated, and then we want them to be energetic, come out of school and want to be contributing right here in our local economy.
Yes, absolutely. So I'm going to jump into education right after this question.
Sure.
You mentioned mariculture and tourism. Do you have and, education. What other possible solutions do you think could happen to improve the economy, and improve housing availability?
Sure. So I think one of the big issues that we're facing when we're talking about housing isn't just the current stock that we have available, but the access to be able to develop new housing. And one of the biggest barriers that we're facing when we talk about new housing opportunity has to do with the initial infrastructure investment. And so one of the things that I think that we really should be looking at is where does the state have a responsibility in helping our boroughs bring funding in necessary for that investment for roads, bringing in utilities and things like that. If we look back at the history here, the state had a tremendous amount of land that over the years they had sold as far as part of subdivisions. But one of the things that the state did not do when they created these subdivisions and started selling land is they didn't create the access. And so anytime we look at plan unit developments now, at least within the larger boroughs, is one of the things you want to make sure is that when a development is happening is that there's access via road and utility. And then that makes it more affordable to actually develop a lot and then build on. And so that's one of the things we're missing. And so one of the things I'll be asking the state to do is to go back and look at those areas where they created these subdivisions and then did not make that investment, and then ask them to make that investment. So I think that'll be one thing, just one of the tools that we can, or keys that we can use to try to eliminate the pressure on housing.
Yeah.
And then some of the other things that we're going to be looking at, I think that are coming down the line is that I've been having conversations with the Southeast Conference. They're trying to bring in some cottage industries in our region. And I know that the city and also the boroughs are coordinating and collaborating with them to make sure that those cottage industries have an opportunity to potentially flourish. One of the other things that we're looking at here in the region is beneficial electrification. So what I mean by that is transitioning homes away from heating oil to air source heat pumps. That is probably one of the single biggest opportunities we have at saving families money, and it on the tune of thousands of dollars a year by helping create heating programs specifically with the heat pump expansion in our region. And so those are just a few thoughts. We could probably go on for several hours talking about all the different opportunities that are coming into the region. We just want to make sure that we have the state supporting our district with our fair share to make those things push forward.
Great, thank you. And when you say cottage industries, I assume you mean more independent, like food businesses made in the homes and all that. Is that correct?
Sure, right. We see right now we see some of our own agriculture type things happening here. We see there's some small pellet mill activities that are going to be happening in the region to create heating pellets. Small sawmills and with the new lumber grading for opportunities for that to happen. Another example of some positive things happening in the communities here is here in I believe it was in September of 22, our local utility here entered into agreement with Metlakatla Power and Light, and that agreement was to put an intertie power intertie over to Metlakatla. And through that historic agreement, it took us, I mean, it took over 50 years to get to that point. But through that historic agreement, it's creating an opportunity for stable, low-cost power in Metlakatla. And one of the things that we're seeing that's happened from that is ingenuity of other power opportunities happening over there with reconstruction of their hydro facilities, potential wind power. They just reopened their cannery here last Friday. They had a big celebration for the reopening of their cannery. So that's pretty exciting stuff when we're starting to see canneries open back up and other alternative forms of energy potentially coming on the horizon and these other cottage industries coming to life.
Great, awesome, thank you. Okay, so let's now jump into education. The state of Alaska, as we all know, has been experiencing school budget cuts, which results in staff being cut and schools, some schools merging together. How will you support education when there's uncertainty with instability in school funding?
Sure. So I think that one of the things that we have to do is we have to create some certainty in school funding. I think that the legislature made an early attempt this last time to create some stability there. It fell a little short. I think then this next legislative session, we have a prime opportunity to actually take action and try to help solve this problem. But I also think there's some other things that we can be doing as well, not just creating stable funding, but also creating other funding opportunities for our schools. For example, I'd like to see the state make a bigger investment in career technical education and create career track programs for kids coming out of high school so that they can transition directly into the workforce with experience, knowledge, and good paying jobs to stay right here in our community. So I think it's a there's a there's been discussions about how do we take a different approach on education. I think before we do that different approach, we need to make sure that there's stability. So we need to create that stability, and then we need to take some new approaches to make sure that our kids are thriving right here in our own community.
Definitely. And when you say career track programs, it's mostly what you focus on: vocations, trades, and certification programs. Can you just elaborate on that vision a little more?
Sure. So right now, when you look at our high school programs, the career technical education or vo-tech type of education within our high schools is primarily elective. And so what I'd like to see is us making an investment for kids to be able to select a pathway in CTE that would be a high school track for graduation, focus specifically in that space. And then that would create a pipeline of success for our kids and education to be able to move them then into going directly into apprenticeships, for example. There's also opportunities with our school districts through those types of programs to create a lead-in for apprenticeships. There's co-enrollment opportunities that I think should be expanded when we talk about like nursing programs or physical therapy type programs. So I really would like to see a focus in our, at least at our high school level, on trades and jobs that matter right here in our communities. We know that in the trades right now, electricians, plumbers, linemen, heavy equipment operators, ship pilots, people working on our fishing vessels, those are all very in high demand and they're all good paying jobs. And so I want to make sure that our kids know that they have an opportunity to go through high school and go to college if they want to. But I also want them to know that there is this very specific track for them when they go into high school that they could say, this is what I want to do, and that the high school curriculum is going to tailor a program specifically for them. And that way they can transition right out into some additional training and right into the workforce, into those high paying jobs that matter to our community.
Yes, thank you.
Communities.
Thank you. So what are your thoughts on how to help improve funding education?
Well, there's two approaches to that. One of the things that we always hear about is needing and that's necessary is an inc a permanent increase to the BSA. That's the base student allocation. And I think that's one thing that we need to do. So the state needs to make that increase to help keep up with the overall impact of cost. The other thing that needs to happen is there probably needs to be a reevaluation of how do we ensure that schools are going to get the funding where they need it, and different areas of the state have different needs when it comes to funding for schools. Some areas are being smothered with cost, and others are not is in bad of shape. So we definitely know that the current system that we have in place is not a one size fits all. So I think there's an opportunity to evaluate how do we make sure we take some of that pressure off those areas that are seeing extreme pressure. One of the other things that we know is that in organized boroughs that we take definitely a higher we take a higher burden of the cost of education. And so I'd like to explore some ways for us to reduce some of the burden on our local community and make sure that we have equal and fair funding for schools across the state. And
Yes.
then thirdly, we want to make sure that if there's programs that we want, I think one way that we make those programs grow is by funding them. And so with the career technical education component that I'm talking about, one way we make that successful is that you focus funding on it. And I believe that by doing that, that you'll see those programs grow and become more successful in our schools in District 1.
Great, thank you. And what are your thoughts on educational reforms being tied to the BSA or, the per student funding increase?
Well, I can tell you that we here in Ketchikan, and I'm looking at what's happening in other states from a borough assembly perspective, that we and also working with our local school board in our school district, that we are not in a healthy place when we are constantly struggling through forecasted funding coming from the state. So I think one thing we need to do is we need to get healthier to where we can then start figuring out how we be more effective in providing educational programs for our kids. But it's hard to do that when teachers are getting pink slips and they're not sure if they're going to have a job in the next school year. And so they have to take care of their families too. And so I know we've lost a lot of good teachers in our community because of the instability of funding at the state level. I think also with that comes some responsibility for our local school districts to help communicate the need a little better to not just the assemblies, but to the public as a whole about what those needs actually are. So I think we need to get a healthy, we need to get healthy at the funding level for our education to make sure that we have some stability. And then we can start talking about some creative ideas to improve outcomes for kids.
Great. Lastly, so we just have a few minutes left. I want to talk about the Alaska Marine Highway. So on your website, you say that you will work to protect the ferry system. How will you, as a representative, work to ensure that ferry services are reliable and consistent?
Well, I think that I've been spending a lot of time watching their meetings with their planning on what they're doing with the Marine Highway. And I think one of the bigger issues that we have is obviously there's a direct funding problem that we have in the Marine Highway. But we also have an employment problem with getting qualified crews to get our vessels running. And then we have a vessel problem. So I think that from the legislative perspective, one of the things we can do is we can ensure that we have stable funding. But I think that we also need to make sure that the Marine Highway is communicating clearly what our path forward is. And I don't feel like the public as a whole has a good grasp on where we're going. And so I think that that would be a priority of mine as the representative to ensure that the public at large has a good idea about what the vision currently is. And I think there's a little confusion on what that vision is. So I think we need to lay that, make sure that the Marine Highway system and the leadership and then the governor is laying out a clear vision for us so that the legislature can make appropriate actions as far as funding goes to keep our or get our Marine Highway back on track. I think it's definitely off track and it's hurting our communities. So that's one of them. The other one is the Marine Highway needs to make a priority on letting us know exactly how we're going to get our Rupert Run back so that we have a connection back to the lower 48 through the Marine Highway system that's not going just to Bellingham. So I think it's about setting a proper vision and then fighting for that vision. So I intend to do that.
Thank you so much, Jeremy. So that wraps up this session on Talk on the Rock. We have about 15 seconds left. Anything else you'd like to add?
I'm always available for a phone call, and I look forward to continuing hard work in the campaign, and look forward to getting out of the community and meeting community members. So give me a call, look me up, and I'm available.
Great. Thank you again. So that was Jeremy Bynum, who is running for House of Representatives in District 1. This is Talk on the Rock.